Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43. You know, it's New York City Beer Week. Ann Becerra, nice to have you on.
Yeah, nice to be here and getting pumped for Brewer's Choice tomorrow.
That's right, and a big part of that is we're talking about New York State grains and how they're used in beer. And we got some great experts, Tor and Amy from the Finger Lakes. We're going to talk about grains. And we got a new guy from Oregon, Dustin Herb, who's going to talk about barley.
Yeah,
how are you, man?
Yeah, good.
And a New York State brewery that just opened, Justin Saylor from Strong Rope, who's only using New York State ingredients. So,
yep.
Jason Saylor. Sorry, man.
Sorry.
I'm out of my mind today. It's like the fifth day of Beer Week. We've been doing shows every day at 12 o'clock. We've been drinking beer. The New York City Smash beers are amazing. I mean, I've had some from Greenpoint. I've had Gun Hill. I've had Bridge and Tunnel.
Yeah, we had Bronx. We had Big Alice. Threes. I think pretty much gone through most of them at this point. They're fabulous.
There's some great ones. Long Island City Beer Project.
Yeah.
And I just want to give a big shout out to Union Beer Distributors, who are there our sponsor, suppliers of world-class ales and lagers. All right. So if you want to tweet us, at @beer_sessions, Maggie's tweeting. We're on Instagram now. And just keep listening in. So talking about New York City Brewer's Choice and the Smash Beer, it's kind of the connection with Tor. You know, you're a grain grower upstate. Tell us a little about your involvement. There's a project called Regional Grains Project. And after you got grains going, the natural connection was, hey, let's make beer. And just tell us, because it's been going on for a few years. Just a few years ago, there really weren't any maltsters in this state.
Yeah, so I initially got hooked up with Andrea and Christian at Valley Malt. I have a 1,200-acre diversified organic grain farm right outside of Ithaca, New York, about 6 miles. And I initially met them through... It's not working?
No, it's fine.
Oh. You're doing good. You're doing fine, man.
Don't worry. You're giving me that.
I'm telling him not to pour beer.
Oh, she's gesturing to Jason about how to pour the beer.
I thought she was telling me to stop talking. So I initially, we also have a flour milling operation, so I had gotten involved in growing food-grade grains, wheat and rye, and I met Andrea at a conference where we were both speaking about grains, and then she sort of, I nicknamed her Stalker Babe because she kind of came after me and said, hey, listen, man, I want you to grow some grains for me. I'm interested in some different varieties, some different types of grains to do malt besides just barley. And I was growing these basically varieties that we had picked for flavor to work with in terms of flour. And then she started taking them and malting them and shipping them to initially mostly breweries in Massachusetts, but then in New York as the sort of farmer brewer legislation came on and the local beer things started really happening.
And it was about 2 years ago that it really happened for us with the Regional Grains Project and at New York City Brewer's Choice. At least close to 10 New York State breweries were making batches of beer just for the event with some New York State malt that Valley Malt had malted.
Right.
And that's when we met you, Amy. And I know you wrote about that event. Tell us about your experience, because I know you're making pancakes and you got a great book out, which you'll have time to talk about, the new bread basket.
The new bread basket. So I... might as well start this story with malt. I don't drink anymore because I used that up early in life, but I really like pancakes, and I really like flour. So when I started to investigate local flour, I soon found local malt, and I thought, what the heck am I going to do with malt? Because I don't like to drink anymore. But malt makes really, really good pancakes. So as soon as I met Andrea and Christian, I had a new thing to I started taking pictures of my pancakes because they blew me away how much better they tasted. That adds a real sweetness and browning to pancakes and biscuits, which I use the same mix for. And it's just this phenomenal taste that is representative of the phenomenal effort of people who are making grains happen in the region again. It's really, really different to have food that's not a commodity crop. You can taste it in a tomato. You can taste it in a grain, whether you use it to mill or malt and make bread or beer. It's really just a different thing, and there's some really amazing people making stuff happen. I love Brewer's Choice because it's amplifying and getting more people aware that this is out there.
It's very convincing. And then, now Jason's living proof that this actually can work. So you open up your brewery, Jason, and tell us some of your inspirations.
Yeah, I mean, we're a small two-barrel brewery focusing on you know, using local ingredients. We're using about 95% New York State malts and about 100% New York hops. Really just kind of trying to push working with the farmers and the maltsters and the growers and just kind of getting that kind of connection back rather than just buying supplies. I want to work with you guys and, you know, really develop those relationships.
And how do you feel about the current malt being produced in New York State?
I mean, I'm enjoying it. I mean, you know, I think I toot my own horn, but I'm making some great beer, and I just think what they're doing was awesome. And you know, we have a little bit of it here. Actually, the stout that we have right now has some of the first roasted barley and chocolate malts that were produced by Valley Malt. In New York, it's still a young industry. A lot of people are working trying to make it better and really take it to the next level, and we're doing that.
Let's get Dustin. So Dustin, you're working at Valley Malt. Tell us about your background and where you see all this going. So I know you're studying barley, right?
Yeah. So I'm actually in my graduate studies at Oregon State University, and so right now I work with barley, and I work across multiple different aspects of barley, either it be low temperature tolerance, some food barley, even forage barley, but mainly focusing on malting barley, specifically malting quality as well as flavor. And so we look at different flavors of different barley varieties and how that carries on through the beer, and that pretty much has opened up a lot of opportunities for me to do some different projects and work with a lot of great people. And in that project, those projects are actually funded by, we have a Flavor 7 pack, which is seven big breweries from around the country that then pool money and then help us do this kind of research.
Great. And Anne, how do you see all this?
I love listening to you. Who are the breweries that are involved in that?
Yeah, so we've got us. So over on the west side, there is Sierra Nevada. There's Firestone Walker, Russian River, Deschutes. Mm-hmm. Then as we move further east, we have Summit Brewing and New Glarus and Bell's.
Good people that's to be great. Working with.
Well, yeah, that's kind of the setting the stage for our show. So, Tor, talk more, because, you know, you're one of the fathers of all this. You know, when did you first – what grains do you grow that can be used in beer? And when did you first start doing that?
Well, farming itself started in 1991. And then we really got into doing a lot of these, you know, I would call them food grade or malting grade grains in 2009 is kind of when that took off. And we you know, as I said, initially
Jason,
started.
Let's try we're drinking some of Jason's.
Oh, yeah.
I've already
that's
been drinking
really
it to die for.
Well, I'm listening to Tor, and I'm drinking Jason's beer. All right.
Yeah, and I think when we really started getting into the growing for the malting trade, which, you know, in terms of the quality specs that you need to hit as a farmer in the Northeast can be really tricky because we don't necessarily have the best weather for growing malting grade, either barley or wheat or rye. You know, there's, you know, a disease called Fusarium head blight that's associated with wet weather during the flowering of the grain. So when the head comes out of the plant and starts to flower to produce seed, it can be attacked by the Fusarium virus, which causes a toxin in the seeds called vomitoxin, which will cause gushing in beer and other difficulties with the, both the malting and brewing process. So, you know, part of what we had to do was look for varieties that both had excellent flavor, good malting characteristics, and also had some disease resistance in order to produce a grain that was able to be malted and be high quality. I think that, you know, is stuff that we're still working on, and also thinking about what crop rotations work in terms of minimizing some of these risks.
What's it like when you meet someone who's a student studying barley? What do you guys talk about?
Well, we, you know, I mean, it's easy to get geeked out on on grains. You know, the people that love it are fanatics. You know, I mean, that's why me and Amy became such good friends, because we're both super grains freaks. So I would say, I a guy like him, I would love to ask him, hey, you know, what are you guys working on?
Let's go ahead.
Yeah, what are you working on over there?
Yeah, so I mean, we do we work on quite a bit within barley for sure. I mean, we've actually just recently started switching our program over from more of a 6-row oriented to more 2-row, and that's mainly because we're moving with the market. Is we're seeing more of the breweries start to use 2-row, and so really we're starting to then integrate more of exotic germplasm, kind of expanding our genetic base so we can select for better malting quality traits and use different genetics to then improve those traits.
Are you like going back in time in terms of using heritage wheats and stuff and trying to breed them forward into making a more modern variety that has good disease resistance and also
this is a food network, so this is appropriate. You know,
that's just a fundamental part of plant breeding is to look at more ancestral type cultivars or successions of barley and then take those genetics and then breed them forward, mixing them with more elite modern right. varieties, and that helps us keep these varieties stable and productive as new pressures such or a new issues come forth in agronomics.
Jason, let's just take a step back. Actually, what from the grain to the glass? What is this beer? It's really good.
So this is our dry stout, 4.8%. Fat Man Little Stout is the name, and this is the first. First beer, so we were using a lot of base grains that were from the Northeast and Valley Malt, Pioneer, New York Craft Malt, and this is the first one that is actually using the majority of the roasted grains are coming from the Northeast and New York. So these are Valley Malts, roasted barley, and chocolate malt that are the predominant roast characters within the beer.
That's great. And I know Amy's dying to say something. So you really are a grain expert. You know, you wrote about grains, and but I know you love pancakes.
No. I wasn't going to talk about pancakes.
You're going to Florida. You're going to make pancakes. I've never seen her so excited in her life. She just loves pancakes.
I do. I'm traveling with my own griddle. But I know Justin's involved with a ton of great projects out in Oregon because they have a blog called Barley World. I mean, you can find the Barley World and go there. It's pretty fun. One of the things that a product of the breeding program at OSU is Full Pint, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So Full Pint is a variety of barley that someone decided, hey, this stuff is great enough that he's a Mecca grade malt. That's the only barley they're growing, and they have a huge system. I forget how big they are, but they, they're focusing on a single variety.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
We don't have that luxury out here in the Northeast.
Yeah,
we're
absolutely
a lot scrappier, but you've got incredible grain resources in terms of growers who you can convert over as you get, you identify these varieties that have flavor and characteristics that brewers want. You just have such potential to make things happen. I mean, we're definitely making things happen here. We've got, is it 7 or 9 malt houses in New York State now?
That's what I'm at right now, yeah.
Yeah, there were 77 malt houses in New York State in 1901.
Hmm. And 2 years ago, there were none.
Right. You know, so obviously we could do this. We can do this.
Right.
And it's really exciting, all the energy that's going into it. we were all just at a conference at Hartwick College. It's the Farmer Brewer Conference.
I missed that.
You missed it in a big way.
Yeah, that's awesome.
We had a rye feast. We're focusing on rye all weekend, and it was just incredible. Mind meld of all the resources around the country who are trying to make this happen. Hartwick College has the Food and Beverage Innovation Center, which is run by Aaron McLeod, who came from the Canadian Malt Barley Testing Station, something like that, something official and Mountie sounding. And now we have this resource. We have a malt quality testing lab that's going to be opening up June 1st so growers can
Geeking out on malt.
Oh, we can go all day. Do we have just an hour? We need a
year. We're just starting. But yeah, I know you wanted to ask a question.
Yeah, I was just curious about the when you were saying the disease resistant types of barley. Is that something that's just naturally like that, or can you breed the varietals to be more resistant to
disease? Good question.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take that one. Absolutely.
Dustin Herb, Mr. Barley.
Absolutely.
I mean, what did you call yourself earlier? Barley what?
I'm a PhD candidate. I'm a barley breeder.
Barley breeder, that's breeder. It. Mr. Yeah, barley
yeah,
breeder.
Yeah. Yeah, so so we can absolutely. So diseases, especially a lot of diseases like Fusarium that Torvus was talking about, there's multiple different strains of those diseases, and they develop and evolve over time. And so as they evolve, we have to continually be breeding for those. And so it's constant selection. We actually have projects that are solely centered around finding resistance for those diseases. And it's not just one disease. There's multiple different diseases that have issues. And the Northeast is much different than the Northwest.
You can walk through a field and spit, and you're going to find a disease, right?
Oh, yeah. Hopefully not. If it's a good variety, we're not going to find something.
Hold on one second. We're going to take it. This is really going in a great direction. And actually, when we come back, I want to hear more about what you're actually doing at Valley Malt. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Yeah.
L Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York.
All right.
For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hey, welcome. Is it on yet? Music. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We've got a new engineer, David. He's doing a great job, and we're just working on the cues.
Sorry about that, Jack. Jack faked me out there a little bit.
No worries, guys. Jason, yes. This beer is awesome. And it's. Do you know what everyone's been asking me lately at Jimmy's number 43?
I don't.
For more malt forward beers.
Oh, nice.
Because people are throwing in hops in the where there's the pills with that too much hops. I had a beer. I'm not going to say who made it. It's supposed to be an English mild this weekend. It was 3.5%, and I had these customers like, guys, I finally got the beer for you. I've got the English mild 3.5%. It's going to be malt forward. And they tasted it and said, dude, there's too much hops in it.
Yeah.
So I like this new direction. We've actually been talking about it for weeks. So tell me about this beer, why you made it so malt forward. This tastes like the best beer I've had in a long time.
I appreciate
it. Yeah, it's killer.
Thank you. I mean, personally, I love doing malt forward beers. I really enjoy the kind of nuances and subtleties that you can get from malty beers. It also helps that I'm in between two great brewers of hoppy beers. So we didn't need more hops, I think. And I think malts are underappreciated within the or under maybe not appreciate it, but under so, kind
which
of,
breweries are you near? Because you're in Brooklyn, you just opened.
Yeah, we're in Gowanus. Other Half is on one side with Folk's Beer, and Threes is on the other, and they're doing some amazing, amazing beers. And they're all, but they're kind of, you know, very hop forward and yeast driven, and we are kind of doing very cleanly fermented beers that are really more about the malts and somewhat about the hops. And I really like kind of, you know, picking apart all those different flavors that we can get, the roast, the chocolate, the coffee, the caramel, like getting all those things and really kind of just breaking it down and seeing all the different characteristics that come.
Hey, Tori, you know, as a grain farmer, I mean, Amy was telling us how the flavors of grain come through in pancakes. She just told me that this you could make a pancake out of beer, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, jump on. But for you, when you're drinking this beer, do you taste grains?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Beer? And, you know, it's really, I mean, the thing I really, really love is going to Brewer's Choice and seeing that the malts that were used came from, you know, say Valley Malt or Pioneer, or we work with New York Craft Malt, and know that, like, the Danko Rye, for instance, is a variety that I brought in originally as a flour variety. It's a Polish rye that makes excellent flavor, but makes incredible rye malt. And you can really taste it in the beer, and to go and have those beers with and be able to taste the flavor of that, because I know what that rye tastes like, to be able to taste it in the beer, that is really fantastic.
I mean, do you just like sometimes chew on your grains?
Oh, yeah, and get yeah,
the flavors?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Amy does. She's bouncing
lunch,
over
lunch is running a little late. Grab a handful.
You should have brought some for all of us to chew, because it's incredible, the flavors of malts. I mean, you must do that, Jason, as you're trying to brew. You have to taste it to figure it
even
out.
Even if I'm not brewing, I just walk by and grab malts and just start chewing on them. Yeah, yeah, I mean, but I definitely, when I'm developing recipes or brewing the day of, I always try every malt that's going in, just so I know what's going on, and the flavors and the ideas that I'm trying to create with that beer are being kind of transferred over into, you know, from the grain to the actual final product.
And I like that we're seeing a continuation too from grain to beer to then spent grain being used in more baked goods and you know, things like pancakes or cookies. I just love the idea of keeping it going as long as possible.
Spent grain marijuana cookies.
Yes. Go on.
Whoa, that's that Colorado thing. I know Maggie perked up when I said that.
There's a granola bar company in San Francisco. We need somebody around here. Here's a small food biz, Brooklyn. Come on, let's see the granola bars made from spent grain.
I'm actually working right now with a local bakery right around the corner from me, Runner and Stone, in trying to figure out some spent grain recipes with some of our stuff. Where they're right around the corner from us, and you know, they're doing some great, great stuff. So
I bet you got Amy Halloran here. Amy, I bet you have some spent grain recipes.
You know what? I don't.
What? Even for your pancakes?
I don't live near brewers. You know, I mean, I do. But, like, anyway, Peter Endres from Runner and Stone, he is an example of the kind of baker and brewer that we need and have.
Jason, we need more beer.
There are people who are meeting the grain right where it's at and trying to work with it. You know, I think it's important to state that what we have mostly in our lives is commodity grain. And commodity grain has been stripped of flavors, stripped of a lot of characteristics so that it performs well in big systems. But as we're retooling our work to have small-scale bakeries and small-scale breweries, you really have to have the workers who are ready to say, hey, what are you doing, flour? What are you doing, malt? Because it's not going to behave. This is a natural product. Even commodity grains are going to be a little bit different. But it's like a creature. It's an animal that you have to work with, and you have to be ready for it. And as I was interviewing for my book, Peter was one of these people who just had this, well, of course I'm going to use local. He has an environmental science background. And of course I'm going to, you know, really work with it. And I loved his attitude of meeting it where it's at. I think that is, hearing that it's not a surprise, hearing that he wants to work with you. Yeah.
Okay, let's switch it up. I mean, going back to Mr. Barley Breeder over there. In a dozen herbs, like this young professor, and 30 years you're going to be so established and a world leader, I can tell that. But you're going to look exactly the same with gray hair. I can just... So, and you got to take a picture of Mr. Barley Breeder, post it. But the question is, so you're a student in Oregon State. Yeah. What are you doing at Valley Malt? And, you know, tell us more about the operations there and why you even choose to come out here.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm in the final stage, final year of my studies. And so I finished all my classes and I said, hey, I don't want to be spending all this time, you know, just maybe twiddling my thumbs a little bit, but why not go out and get some real world experience? So I had contacted Andrew and Christian and said, hey, can I come out and learn from you guys? Because the craft malting industry is just on the rise. And so we went out there and... So I'm learning from them, hands-on experience with their systems, and then also we're doing a few collaborative projects with between OSU and Valley Malt. And these projects, there's actually three of them. The first one is looking at a stocking malt, which is basically a smaller, malting a different type of barley or a different crop within a larger batch within like a mesh bag, and seeing if that produces a reproducible kind of malt. That would allow a small craft malt house to then test different lines without actually spending money on a more expensive system.
That's a good idea.
We're also looking at different protein levels within barley and how that affects, of course, malting quality, but also flavor. And the same with modification, how different these different varieties are modified, how that affects the overall flavor. Because we know that modification and even protein and amino acid content can actually change the flavor profiles of the beer. Mm. And that's just all kind of what we're looking at.
Okay, so grain brain trust, jump in.
So I'm listening to you. I'm wondering if the listening audience might want to know what the term modification is. And, you know, maybe we should go backwards and state what malting is in the first place.
Yeah, so, I mean, so malting is basically you're
good one, Amy.
you're activating these enzymes in which then break down protein and starch in the cell walls of within the kernel, and that then allows the starch to be broken down into fermentable sugars, which then gets put into the grain. The malt gets put into a mash.
Amy's going to be somewhere tomorrow in Florida making pancakes. That's why she's smiling. But
no, because somebody's talking about grains, and that makes me smile.
So modification is just really you're converting the barley, because really barley alone is unsuitable for brewing. You know, because it's all starch, and there's really no enzymes. And so what you need is you need to activate these enzymes with the steeping, and that then allows you to convert your starch into fermentable sugars being used in the brewing process.
And you stop it at a certain level
exactly.
So that
yep.
the brewer can jump in mm-hmm. and take advantage of those sugars
exactly.
and use them for
and now tour.
Well, I would say in terms of the farmer's part of this process is realizing that if you're growing grain to be malted to go into the craft brewing industry, you're basically growing seed. And that needs to be handled in a completely different way with much gentler hands in terms of the harvesting of it and the post-harvest handling of it. Even a lot of the grain in New York, when we harvest it, it comes in at a moisture that is higher than what it can be stored at. It needs to be 14% or lower. A lot of the times we're combining the grain at 18%, and then we dry it artificially in a crop dryer. And when you do that and you know that this is going to go to a malt house, you have to dry at very low temperatures so you keep the germ up and preserve that so that it can modify. If you don't handle it properly, overheat it or let it heat up because it's too wet, or don't store it properly, you can lose germination and then make it unusable.
And when you studied for your Master Cicerone, did you get this deep with grains and malts?
I mean, not this deep. I wish I had, you know, knew you guys then. That would be probably a big help. But I'm absolutely fascinated by it. Again, it's not an aspect that we see very often. It's not something, especially in New York City, that we're exposed to very often. And so I think that's probably why I'm geeking out so much just listening to you guys. It's
and
great.
And Jason, so if you as a brewer who's focusing on New York State ingredients, how do you determine which of these malts you're going to use, or just are you getting them and experimenting? Is there like a knowledge base or a chart that you understand?
There's knowledge base on a lot of the bigger malts. Everything that's coming out of New York is pretty new, so kind of working with that, and I'm small enough that and I'm young enough that we're just still experimenting with everything that we get. The maltsters are still making new malts, so each time something comes in, we work with it, and I actually do a whole single malt, single hop series to really kind of understand the ingredients. What is the extract of that malt? What are the flavor? What am I getting out of it? So that I can see that particular malt, and then incorporate it into other beers, and kind of layer it with other malts, the roasted grains and other things, so that we can finally put that into a finalized beer.
No, I mean really, once again, tell us the beer that we're drinking, because this has been my beer of the week, man.
Fat Man Little Stout, dry
strong
stout.
Rope Brewery.
Strong Rope Brewery's Fat Man Little Stout, 4.8% dry stout.
It's New York City Beer Week. I know that you're open as a brewery. You also have a tap room.
Yeah.
So you're hosting some things this week.
Yeah, yeah. So we actually hosted a kind of meet and greet little round table with Pioneer Malt last Sunday. And on Thursday, I'm hosting a panel discussion with three hop farmers. Pioneer is up outside of in Rochester, and the hop farmers kind of span the state. And actually, one of them is from the city, Tiny Field Hop Farm. And they're going to be
them on a few weeks ago.
Yeah. So and we're going to just kind of again talk about the state of New York hops and the issues, kind of like we're talking about now, all the different things, the fusarium, all this other stuff.
And you know, it's great. We had you on before you opened. And yeah. When did you open?
We officially opened December 17th of 2015.
So we're so psyched to have you back on post-opening and drinking your
Thanks
beer.
For having me.
We're going to drink more of your beer, and we'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Mr. Jack Inslee is in the studio, man. He's rocking it out. We've been having so many great Beer Week shows, and we kicked off Beer Week the other day. And hey, Jack, how are you, buddy? We love this network, heritageradionetwork.org. Check it out. If you're not a member, do so, because there's so many benefits, including things like, there's an e-cookbook with many of the hosts. And, Jack, what's the link for that? There's an e-cookbook with, and I have a recipe in there too, like a pasta recipe.
Yeah, that's true, you do. It's exciting stuff. They can go to heritageradionetwork.org or find us on Facebook for a lot of information on that. But it's really cool. I even have a party playlist tips in there for music, so.
Thanks, Jack.
Yeah.
Well, this is a great network, heritageradionetwork.org. I'm a member, be a member, and it's a good thing. So this is the Grain Show. Geek out, guys. Come on, New York State Grains. We're drinking in the glass, from grain to glass. Jason Saylor, no one had to tell this guy that he was going to do focus on New York State ingredients. It's the smartest thing that anyone's done in a while, and your beers taste great.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
And Amy wants to tell you how good they are, because she knows about grains.
Well, I know how good what he's doing, because this New York State Farm Brewery Law specifies using a certain amount, but the percentages you name, Jason, are above and beyond your requirements. And that's what's really beautiful about people who are just jumping into this. You're not established customers. You don't have a routine of beers that people are expecting something from.
Right.
You don't have prices that you're cornered by. You're really doing something good, because this economy is growing from the ground up.
And what's going to happen is people are going to want to know where things are sourced from.
Yep, they're going to want to know field to glass how this all happened.
And also things like Tap New York, which is a big thing. If a small brewery wins a prize at Tap New York, that's huge. I remember when Barrier 5 or 6 years ago won best brewery in New York State. They were only a 2 or 3 barrel system at the time. They blew people away.
Yeah.
So I think that what you're putting in the glass is great. And cheers, man.
I appreciate it.
Great job. What's the next beer we have?
Yeah, so this one is Seeds of Love and Outrage. This is our double IPA.
Except we'll never remember the names of your beers. And you're not going to make them twice either.
Well, the two that I brought today are somewhat mainstays. We have a good variety of beers, but they will rotate through again and again. So this one is made with a majority Pioneer malt, but also a hefty portion of maybe of the your wheat tour and from Valley Malt.
And did you collaborate with Jason?
That's the next beer we're going to drink.
After that, okay.
Yeah.
Good. And Tor, tell us about your wheat's in this glass. First, can you taste it? And then second of all, what wheat is it?
I haven't tried it yet, so I'm going to sip it right now and then tell you if I can.
It's probably Warthog, right?
Yeah.
Or?
Oh.
Jason knows.
Man, that is really good. Yes, it is Warthog Hard Red Winter Wheat, which is a really, really amazing variety that came out of actually taste tests that we did at the French Culinary Institute. When was that? That was
2010.
Like 2010. Mm-hmm. We brought down, I don't know how many different varieties of wheat that we were trialing, and had bakers from around New York City make it into bread, and had people come and evaluate them. And Warthog came out just on its both baking qualities, but just excellent flavor. And then through my work with Christian and Andrea at Valley Malt, they started taking it to see if it would make an excellent malting beer, and actually malting wheat, and it really does. And the other thing, it's actually used raw. Brooklyn Brewery makes their Green Market wheat beer with Warthog from
that
my
makes
farm.
Sense. I wondered. Yep. So how does that work as a brewer? I mean, you can make a wheat beer without malted grain.
Without
or a percentage.
Wheat. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can add unmalted wheat, which it can help with some flavors and head retention and other stuff. But the wheat that I'm using in this beer is malted.
It's malted, yeah.
Yeah.
I was wondering that too, because I know
in the Green Market wheat beer, I think a high percentage is unmalted.
Right. Yeah. I was actually wondering how they use that, because it does not go to a malt house first. Yeah. It goes directly to them.
Yeah. I don't know what.
Is like a Weiss beer. Is that made out of an unmalted wheat? Or
Ian knows.
Well, I don't know whether it's malted or not.
But yeah, in wheat beers, there's a high percentage. It can be as much as 50% that is unmalted. So that's why, in some ways, this type of wheat is actually really great to go directly from farm. With some processing.
It can be 50% wheat, but I don't know if it's unmalted wheat, because if it's unmalted wheat, you're not going to get anything out of it. So it's not going to provide anything. I mean, you'll get flavors and you'll get other things, but you're not going to be getting any extract. So
That's a good question for listeners and everybody else, and we should definitely follow up. So Brooklyn's Green Market wheat, what percentage of that wheat is unmalted? That's a good one.
I do have a question.
I don't know. Maybe Amy knows.
I do have a question for you, Tor, though, is... As you've been kind of creating these or getting these new varietals in, are you starting to narrow down and only work like with Warthog or the Danko Rye? Are you starting to find ones that work and you're sticking with it, or is it constantly changing and getting?
Yeah, so we try to trial different varieties as we see them come up. The challenge is to find varietals that both work agronomically on the farm and have the good flavor and quality traits that a brewer and malt house might need, or a flour mill might need. So there's a balance there.
Mm-hmm.
So when we find something like Warthog that is both an excellent wheat to grow, harvests easy, keeps its quality in the field, makes good straw, is good against weeds, has a lot of great agronomic qualities, it's hard to kick that out, and it has excellent market acceptance. That said, there's other varieties that are coming down the pipe that we try to trial each year, a few acres of this, a few acres of that, and see how they compare against warthog, because there could be something out there. Or, I mean, I think, you know, having a lot of variety is a great thing for both me and someone like you who wants different flavors, new varieties to kick around. So I don't want to sit with one thing. And part of the real fun for me as a farmer is to try different varieties and see how they do, and then ship them off to somebody and get feedback on them. I mean, that's really, really good.
What's this might be a silly question, but what's the pesticide situation with a lot of these new grain growers? I mean, is it really difficult to have organic grains? Is it something?
Yeah, so we're an organic grower, so, you know, goes without saying, no pesticides. Growing organic malting barley is really difficult. Barley, at least the varieties we have now, is very susceptible to a lot of crop diseases that we have in New York. So there's sprays that they put on there, fungicides to help prevent that, which we can't use. So I've grown malting barley and had really hit and miss success with it.
Jason, that second beer was really strong.
So, you know, it's a pretty risky crop to try to meet the malting target with, where wheat and rye seem to be a little bit less susceptible, or the varieties we have are a little stronger. So.
Yeah, and that's why this year's focus at the Farmer Brewer Conference was in its fourth or fifth year. Andrea and Christian started it over at Valley Malt, and it was held over there for a number of years. And this year the theme was a maltster in the rye. The idea being, rye grows great in New York State, what can we do with it? Mm-hmm. So they looked at that from a ton of different angles, and there is a lot of capacity, as you know, this is a new business, to try to get people interested in the variety of grains, which you have to do small scale production, especially organically, when you're rotating through crops, because you don't want to beat the ground to death and use up the resources that are getting captured by the grains if you plant the same thing over and over again.
Right. That was really interesting when they were there talking about rye, because we do grow a lot of it. And the head brewer from Fargo Brewery was there and gave an excellent talk about different types of rye beers from around the world. Mm-hmm. And he actually, and some of the challenges with malting rye and brewing with rye, it's not the easiest grain to make work. And he did two beers exactly the same methods using two different varieties of rye. One was Danko, that was a variety that we used, and the other was AC Hazlitt, which is a Canadian variety. And he had both those beers there, and it was amazing how different they taste. The Danko had a real heavy rye flavor, and the AC Hazlitt had a much cleaner taste and tasted a lot more like a Weiss beer. Mm.
So grain people and brewers here, I've had conflicting reports about how much rye you can make in a beer. I've also heard that New York has to develop its own barley, you know, growing capabilities to make beer. What's the truth, and where is it really going to go? Because I've heard from you guys that, why don't we have more rye and heirloom grains? Why do we need to focus on barley? But how much barley do we really need in our beer to make it to work? And why don't we start with Mr. Barley Breeder over there, if you've talked about different grains besides barley. A lot of people in New York says barley is hard to grow.
Yeah, okay. So your question is, what other grains you can use in the beer, and does it not just have to be barley?
Yeah, it's not just so much that, is that could we have more just native grains that work here, like rye and some other heirloom grains? And do we need to even think about developing barley as a New York State, you know, beer ingredient?
Yeah, so I mean, so naturally, I mean, you would go to get other grains, such as rye and wheat, and even more heirloom versions of barley, and beyond. I mean, you go to your local breeder, and for New York State, it's definitely Mark Soils at Cornell. And he would be able to put together a program to which brings germplasm from other areas in which to trial in New York. And that's how you would first start about seeing what works in your area and how you can – and so certain varieties will be able to be more adaptable to this region than others. And then from there, it would go to trialing, like, say, on Ochsner Farm and other farms like it to do more farm, larger scale trials.
Okay. Then, Jason, you as a brewer, I mean, how does that work for you? Have you ever made a 50% rye beer or anything like that?
I haven't particularly, you know, but Roggen beers do have 50%, sometimes even higher than that. So you can make it out of these different grains, but I guess it just ends up being whether there is enough enzymatic activity within the actual malt.
So is barley is really the magic grain for beer, is that what you're saying?
I mean, I mean, it is right now. I don't know if these other grain varieties can get that type of activity to
they can't, basically. Yeah, that's what I gleaned from the Farmer Brewer Conference. Yeah. You know, I think rye and a beer, they seem to think 10-20% was kind of where it's at with rye, and that it's more of imparting a flavor, and you really do need the barley in there for the enzymatic activity.
And the breeding research is well underway in New York. Northeastern breeding trials that are going on, because this is there's this multi-state. Never mind, I'm not going to get the name. But there's a lot of effort going into this. Absolutely. Because we have all these end users ready to use this. We have farmers who want to grow. We have, you know, brewers who want to brew it, and these malt houses. So we're working hard in New York and in the Northeast to identify different kinds of barley that we can work with.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, so as there's more interest and more demand for these grains, we're going to see more of small grain breeders within either private industry or in the public sector. Right now, it's more in the public sector to come in and start. You know, say, okay, we're going to start doing statewide trials, even multiple states, and then you see those varieties become more available to brewers.
Yeah, I know where I'm going. And the latest batch of New York City Smash beers that are here for Beer Week, many of the brewers mentioned that they had a couple of choices of the malts to pick from. Many of them chose to focus on the spelt. I don't know who sourced it or anything, but that's another grain. So how does spelt, you know, a malted spelt work in a beer as opposed to a barley?
Ooh, that's a good question. I don't know the answer, but I'm imagining that you know, spelt is early relative of wheat, and you know, modern wheats came out of spelt, so I imagine it would act much like a wheat in a beer.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I actually haven't worked with spelt. I did not do you know, just getting up and running, you know, in December was still kind of figuring things out, so we didn't participate in the actual Smash event this time. Just also because I'm, you know, most of my beers are, you know, pretty heavily New York or Northeast in general. But yeah, it, you know, I believe it just acts as, you know, kind of as a substitute for rye or wheat, you know, and kind of provides its own characteristics.
Yeah, I mean, spelt has an incredibly nutty flavor. It's really fantastic.
I mean, spelt sexy. You know, there's some Belgian saisons with spelt.
Yeah.
And what about for pancakes? What about spelt?
They are really good. A spelt pancake is about as good as the best pancake in the world, which is a soft white pastry wheat.
Wow. We're getting places here. We're going to wrap it up soon. But Anne, the last beer you poured, and tell us about it.
Yeah, the last beer we're pouring right now is actually a collaboration we did with Taproom 307 and Strong Rope. And it was kind of initially meant to be what we would drink in our staff party, and it was so good. And we put it on our event last night with all the New York beers. And I just love to see, we were a packed house last night, and everyone got to see, you know, the description talking about these state malts,
like 40 different New York state beers.
We did, yeah, 42 actually, because we had two casks as well. And to see people that might have just shown up for the game and now are getting educated about Smash beers and knowing where it comes from. I mean, the reach is expansive, and it's getting bigger and bigger, and it was so inspiring and really good.
And Jason, once again, the two beers that you poured for us earlier, which I love.
Yeah, it was a Seeds of Love and Outrage 8.1% double IPA and Fat Man Little Stout 4.8% dry stout.
Oh, and this is called I'd Tap That, by the way. It's on at their tap room, too.
Love that. And lastly, Mr. Barley Breeder, anything else you want to say? The future of barley?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, you know, this sort of research that we do within grains is really exciting, and it really starts on the ground level with the consumer and with the brewer, and as the demand and interest goes up, that means we get more pull, which allows us to do this kind of research.
Awesome. And Tor, final words, because we love you, man. You're a big part of the whole grain scene in New York
State. I want to thank Jimmy and everybody for having me down. Coming down to New York City Beer Week and getting invited to be on the radio show and going to Brewer's Choice. Farming can be this pretty insulating thing. You're up there. Yeah, it's not boring. It's exciting, man. Everybody should be so lucky as to farm. Yeah. That's
the
how
sun's
I feel,
coming out tonight. It's a blossom.
But anyway, I just want to say, up there to come down and drink some beer with my grain in it, when we're out there and we're sweating away, it makes the whole thing worthwhile. That's really awesome.
And then, Amy, where are you making pancakes in Florida tomorrow?
Miami. It's an event. It's a food event. I go around making pancakes anywhere. Say you want me to make pancakes and I'll come. My book is The New Bread Basket, and I am so excited about the way that people are getting to know grains. You want to know your brewer, you want to know your grain, you want to know your farmer, and the capacity you guys have and you guys are building by people saying, I had a spelt beer this weekend. Maybe they'll go backwards and look for spelt flour. Maybe they'll go backwards and want to see who's growing spelt in New York, who's growing pastry wheat.
And there's grains like Frica. We'll go deeper on grains. I will say this. Check out Beer Week. It's still going on. Thursday night, I'm going out to Strong Row. Mm-hmm. Saturday, I'm going to Jimmy's Number 43 for another. We're doing a hop salon, too, with John Conzella and John Siegel from Siegel Ranch. So that's going to be fun. Thanks to our guests, Jason, Amy, Tor, Dustin, and Ann. The whole thing changed. We didn't get Valley Malt, Christian, and Andrea, but they sent this great young guy, Dustin Herb. We're expecting a lot from you, man, Mr. Barley Breeder.
I'll do my best.
This is the most interesting talk I've ever been part of about grains, and I think that's really amazing. So thanks, everybody. Thanks to our producers, Maggie and Justin, engineers David and Jack, and we'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Yeah. All right. Woo.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.